Welcome to iNurse Radio, brought to you by the International Nurses Association.
Hello, and welcome to iNurse Radio, where we feature some of the world's top experts in the field of nursing. Our goal, with the help of our guests, is to shed light on health-related topics that are important to all of us. My name is John Rivera. So glad you can make us part of your day. Today, we will be discussing the healthcare system and its design, something that is a hot topic in the world of politics and in the world of healthcare professionals. This issue can be observed from many different viewpoints, especially considering political effectiveness and healthcare leadership. Speaking with us today is Dr. John Silver. Dr. Silver is a registered nurse with a Ph.D. in comparative studies, currently serving as nursing director at a small private college in Florida with over three decades of experience. Dr. Silver is a member of the American Nursing Association and the Wilson Society, and he has addressed national and international groups in the U.S. and Europe regarding healthcare system design. Dr. Silver, welcome to iNurse Radio. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure's ours, Doctor. If you would, Doctor, tell us some more about your practice. How did you choose your specialty?
Wow. Well, it goes back. I started in 1974 in healthcare. Basically worked every small job you can think of in a hospital, from orderly to EKG tech. In 1978, I became a respiratory therapist. And 1984, registered nurse. And I sort of did, you know, Mark Twain had a famous saying that he hoped his schooling didn't interfere with his education. And so it was another decade or so before I went back to get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. So I really had a dozen years of practice under my belt before I went back to learn the theory of what I was doing and get the baccalaureate degree. And I really saw between what I was learning in school about what nursing should be and the practice environment I was in and what I was being rewarded for and what I was held accountable for. And then when you add in the time you have to spend with patients, it didn't leave a lot of room for the education. And so as I went through my baccalaureate program, I started getting involved with, you know, why is the practice environment so different? So when I went to my master's degree, I got enthralled with politics, because really it's the political environment that determines a lot of how nurses practice. You know, the Nurse Practice Acts in every state. And then that kind of led me into a study of nursing organizations and why weren't nursing organizations more empowered politically. And then that got me into the healthcare systems themselves, what were the competing political voices that affected nursing practice.
Would you say, Doctor, that your chosen career in nursing led directly to the PhD, or was it because of kind of your experiences whilst nursing that you took that next step?
Well, somewhere around 1998 to 2000, there were several articles written where it was a call out for more interdisciplinary voices within the field of nursing. In other words, nurses that were getting doctorates in other fields so we could bring these voices back into nursing to broaden, and nursing really is, in a way, a multidisciplinary field. The school I was going to opened up a new program that was, I thought, really brilliant, and it was called the Public Intellectual PhD in Comparative Studies. And the idea was to get experts in their fields back, give them a doctorate, and the thrust of the PhD would be to go out into the public domain and explain things, to bring research out back into the public domain instead of just writing about it in journals to other professionals.
Sure.
There were only three programs like it in the United States, and it came out of Cambridge in England. It was really a brilliant PhD program.
Tell us some more about today's healthcare system. Where do the issues lie?
Well, if we look at things like the Affordable Care Act and how important that was, what we really see over the last 40 years is a trend line in healthcare where costs have just not been able to be controlled. Healthcare costs have escalated way beyond inflation rates. They're still going up. There's been a couple of slowdown periods, one in the 90s with the managed care organizations. And recently, under the Affordable Care Act, we've seen some drop in cost increases, but it's still going up. So what the government has really tried to do is address the insurance issue to get more and more people covered, because one of the problems we have is paying for people who are uninsured. And it sort of makes logical sense, except what I talk about more is how to do system design.
What are some of the different perspectives or angles when it comes to these issues, would you say?
Well, the way the political argument's been framed really is between single-payer socialized medicine and for-profit, increasingly corporate medicine. Some people call that free market healthcare versus socialized medicine, and that's really the way the argument has been framed politically. Of course, in America, when you say the word socialism, people get all bent out of shape about it. And then you have another group of people that think that's the way it should be. Really, what we've not done, I think, is realize that it's not one extreme or the other. There are middle grounds. And we have examples in our history where we've looked at problems that we have and decided on the middle ground solution. Just free market or just socialism. And it's, in my opinion anyway, it's really the healthcare system we need to be looking at.
No, for certain, for certain. Are there any of these issues not being addressed by a particular party in the political system, would you say?
Well, I don't think either of the parties has really addressed the delivery system itself as a focal point of change. And the Democratic Party, you know, I give them great kudos for passing the Affordable Care Act. It was a wonderful step in the right direction. And had the, you know, all the states embraced this, I think we would have seen dramatic improvements. But when I talk to my students about this in class, I use the example of a plow. And if you think of the delivery system as a plow. So if the plow is broken, really matter what I put in front of that plow to pull? Does it matter if I use a horse or a team of oxen or a tractor? The basic problem is the plow is broken. So until you fix the delivery system, you can't really determine what the instrument you need to pull that, whether it's private insurance or socialized insurance or single payer or whatever it is. So I think that's kind of the thrust of what I talk about.
No, that's a very good analogy. I think you really clarify the point pretty well. What is your opinion then, Dr. Silver, of the single-payer system?
The single-payer system is like having a nuclear-powered tractor pull your broken plow.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to pull the plow, but, you know, healthcare costs are going to go up. I mean, there's some realities when you have socialized single-payer system. One of them is that you are going to try, whoever's paying for healthcare is going to try to control the cost then at the end of it. And if we're using tax dollars to pay for it, some people will see that as a wide open opportunity to increase costs even more. Whoever's paying for it, which would be the government, of course, would try to come in and control things like costs. So when you look at the European systems or Japan or one of these countries that has single payer, physicians don't make a lot of money. Nurses don't make a lot of money. People end up having to wait for procedures. Resources are limited. So it's kind of an inevitable consequence of having these single payer systems. Is it the, you know, optimal solution? Yeah, it does take the burden off of people. But then it puts it on your collective in terms of tax rates.
Right, right. Well, where do you think there is an opportunity for cost reduction, you know, whether it's in the current system or something that might be coming up in the future.
I think there's a huge opportunity to reduce costs. And when I've looked at the numbers, I'm getting somewhere around 30% reduction or more in healthcare costs by changing the healthcare delivery system itself. Now, people get nervous about that. And nobody gets more nervous than the American Hospital Association and the American Medical Association. You need to understand that the American Hospital Association is generally regarded as one of the top five lobbyist organizations in the country. And not just at the federal level, but the state level. So there's a lot of political opposition to messing around with the healthcare delivery system to start with.
Where do you foresee the future of healthcare in the United States?
I think inevitably we're going to have to address this. It's 17.5% of our gross domestic product. I mean, it's huge. And if we could get a 30% reduction in how much money we're spending, that would be a huge savings. And you have to kind of think of it this way, I think. The healthcare system we have now has a couple of major problems with it. One is it's a square peg in a round hole. In other words, when we set this system up in the 40s and 50s and 60s, the focus is on getting centers that could provide acute intervention for, you know, the problems of the time, which were automobile accidents, and surgeries. I mean, all of these fields were exploding. Diagnostics. All of this was really exploding, but basically acute intervention. But when we look today, our problems are more chronic disease management and chronic diseases, and we have to sort of think about it. When do you redesign systems to address the data that you're getting regarding the needs? And we haven't done a very good job of that. The second major problem is in the structure of the system itself. So if you look at an example in most areas, you've got for-profit hospitals that have their own administrative systems, but they've really got no accountability for the health of the areas they live in. They're for-profit, you know, hospitals doing acute interventions and making a lot of money doing it. And then patients go from there to an acute care for-profit, you know, rehab hospital, to a for-profit nursing home, to for-profit home care agencies. And all of those structures have administrative costs that they have to bear out. And the ones that are corporations also have shareholders they have to pay off. Some of the researchers out there have estimated that almost between 25 and 33% of what we pay in healthcare goes to administrative costs.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah. And again, there's no real accountability on the part of hospitals for the health of the areas they work in. And in fact, they make more money, really, if people are in worse health. So I think that's one of the big structural problems we have to address.
No, without question, yeah. And when you put it in that perspective, I think it becomes almost a glaring issue. It's surprising that it's not talked about more, really, than it is. How would you say, Dr. Silver, that nurses and other healthcare providers play a part?
Well, I think one of the big mysteries, although I don't know if it's really a mystery, has been the political separation of doctors and nurses. You know, nurses, there's somewhere a little over 3 million of us in this country. We are a dominant force within the delivery of healthcare. And I really think one of the big divisive forces, well, there's really two major influences, I think. One of them has been the nurse practitioner movement and the scope of practice divide that's happened between medicine and nursing. The other has been that both the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association have been dropping precipitously in membership.
That's surprising to hear.
Yeah, really, I think less than 40% of the doctors now belong to the American Medical Association. And I know when I did my internships in Washington, ANA membership was about 250,000. It's now down to under 150,000. And if you look at organizational theory, one of the things you find is that as organizations consolidate, they become more conservative. So we haven't really seen the more liberal approaches coming out to how to solve these problems. And to me, physicians and nurses, are a natural pairing.
Absolutely.
We should be the team.
Now, may I ask, Doctor, why do you think the reason would be for that type of a drop-off?
Well, the drop-off in the ANA has been historical. There was a huge drop-off after the 1960s, late 60s, going into the 70s, when nursing sort of made what I think is a tactical boo-boo and basically started calling for baccalaureate practice as the professional level of practice. And here you had, hundreds of thousands of nurses with diplomas and associate degrees with, 10, 15, 20 years of experience going, whoa. I've been a nurse a long time, and so they left in droves then. The other thing I think, and, having worked with, right next to nurses for so many years, was that they just didn't see any value in belonging to the organization. It wasn't addressing the key issues that they felt were important, including one of the most important, which is staffing ratios.
Right.
Well, if I'm a practicing bedside nurse, why would I spend $220 a year to belong to an organization that did nothing for me?
As a nursing director, what are your ultimate goals, Doctor, both for yourself and for your students?
I've been in nursing education now since 2005, and I'm a full-time professor at the school. I've sort of always had the philosophy that I learned from a great mentor of mine, Dr. Sally Weiss, that, one day it's going to be me in that bed. And if I look up and see one of my graduates coming at me, I want to go, thank God. I don't want to go, oh, my God. That's sort of how I approach nursing education. I want my students to be empowered with the knowledge they really need so that they make safe, confident decisions in caring for other human beings.
Well, Doctor, we are just about out of time. With election season quickly approaching, you've given us a lot to think about when it comes to healthcare. Thank you for participating today. You've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you very much. Anybody who wants to talk about this, I'm always willing.
That's good to hear. And thank you to the listener for joining us again. So until next time, for iNurse Radio, this is John Rivera saying be well and bye for now.